Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this evening's teleseminar called How to Be a Real Man. My name is Damien Sen, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the call this evening. In a few moments from now, I'll be introducing our very special guest, Benny Nadir. But before I do, please allow me to share how this call will work this evening, particularly if this is your first peopleyoushouldmeet.com call that you've tuned into. Now, we're going to be on the call for around about an hour, and over the course of the hour, I'll be asking Benny a whole series of different questions on our topic. Some of the questions will be my own, but the vast majority of questions will have actually been submitted in through the site by you, our listeners at home. Now, I was actually first moved to really do a call just affecting men on the program, because I know on my own journey I've confronted lots of different challenges and issues that I felt were actually quite specifically related to men. And I just thought it was a really awesome opportunity to explore this and really provide some opportunities for men in particular to grow as well. And I guess the opportunity to actually explore this as a topic came through a very good friend of mine, Nicholas David Nan, who has also been on the People You Should Meet program. And he was actually telling me about his involvement in the Mankind Project and also mentioned Benny and that we should get together and have a chat. And basically, yeah, Benny and I got together, had a chat, really hit it off, and I just thought it would be a fantastic idea to explore on the calls. Now, Benny himself is a very experienced facilitator in the whole genre of men's personal development, having facilitated over 50 men's leadership trainings all around the world, including the US, Australia, Canada, South Africa, France, the UK, and Russia, and has also personally done hundreds of personal private sessions for people as well. He first actually came across the Mankind Project in 1998, and also more recently, 5 or 6 years ago, came across the whole modality of EFT and then NLP and hypnosis. So he's a man with a whole range of different life experience and different personal development work experience as well. So it gives me great pleasure to explore this very important topic this evening with my very special guest, Benny Nadir. How are you doing there, Benny?
Oh, great. Thanks, Damien. Thanks. It's good to be on the show.
Welcome. Now, it's a very controversial topic, how to be a real man. I had lots of emails actually come back to me after sending out the promo this week. So I was just wondering if you could kick us off, Benny, by illuminating us on what a real man actually is.
Sure, Damien, thank you. First off, I just want to say that I know there's some women on the call. And if you're wondering if this call is for you, the answer is absolutely yes. And thank you for joining us. In the deep personal work that I do with men and women, I see how we often have the same type of challenges in life, men and women. And yet we often respond very differently, you know, to those challenges. So if I were to ask a woman that's upset about something, how she feels, there's a good chance she'll actually tell me, you know, she's upset, she's sad, she's angry, whatever it may be. There's a good chance if I ask a man how he's feeling, he'll tell me he feels like a drink, or he feels okay. Now, I absolutely know it's not true for everyone. You know, I know there's a lot of men out there that's totally in touch with who they are, and I know a lot of them, so I know that's absolutely true. But, you know, in some ways, as men, we have a bad name. It's men that start wars, It's men that beat their wives. It's men that abandon their families, you know, when relationships don't work out and break up. And more recently, it was mostly men that were making the decisions, you know, just before the economy had a downturn a while back. And yet at the same time, you know, men do a lot of good in the world, don't they? And where I think this comes from is some of us were told, you know, as we were growing up, that boys don't cry, or if you don't stop crying, I'll give you something to cry about. I'm sure some people on the line would resonate with that. And so we learn as boys that it's not okay for us as men to be sad. Or maybe we got punished when we got angry and expressed our anger as children, and so we start learning that it's also not okay to be angry. Or maybe we were in a school play or sang a song and got ridiculed for that. And so we learn that it's not safe for us, not okay for us as men to express ourselves in certain ways. And so it goes on. And so more and more parts of ourselves, we start telling ourselves they're not welcome, or they get us into trouble. And so we start splitting off these parts of ourselves, you know, our creativity, our sensitivity. We start denying and suppressing all these parts of ourselves as we grow up to be men. And the paradox, of course, is that the more I suppress parts of myself, you know, first of all, it takes such a lot of energy to suppress energy. So if I believe as a man it's not okay for me to be angry, the amount of energy it takes me to suppress my anger is enormous. And at the same time, every now and again, I may find myself exploding with rage, hurting those people around me that I love and care about the most. Same with creativity. You know, I find in the work that I do a huge correlation between the experience of shame and suppressing creativity. The more I suppress my creativity, in direct proportion, my shame shifts up. You know, to the point that for some people it totally just stops them in their tracks from expressing themselves in any way. And so it goes on and on. So no surprise then that for a lot of men out there, it's a case of, you know, working harder, drinking more, smoking more, more sex, more porn, more food, television to escape, just this unbearable pain of not being allowed to be who we are as men. No wonder that relationships, you know, fail at a rate that's just, you know, it's just not healthy. And I think we all know that when we date someone, we work so hard at just making sure that they only see those parts of ourselves that we think they like. And in that process, absolutely denying, you know, the fullness of who we are as men. And so doing, just suppressing just so much energy that we could put to good use. Mm-hmm. So when we look at the word real, I looked it up in the dictionary today, and it means being genuine and authentic, and free of pretense. So just imagine that. I know for me sometimes I'm generous and sometimes, yeah, I'm completely selfish. Some days I am utterly and totally patient, and some days I just get irritated at the absolute smallest things. Most of my life I'm pretty confident in, and there's some parts of my life where I still am, you know, a little insecure and uncertain about myself. So for me, being real and being a real man is really about growing up, and it's about letting go of the BS, you know, the belief systems and the stories I tell myself. And it's about being proud of being a man, but not just part of me. All of me is a man. It means being just totally authentic and truthful to myself and others, and holding myself accountable. You know, like showing up in the world as all of who I am, accepting with humility and dignity that I'm also human. And I know for me that sometimes I get it wrong. And so every time that happens, you know, I'm at a choice point. I can try and hide those parts of me that screwed up in some way, or generate a lot of shame about that and isolate myself as a man even more, or step into my fullness and just acknowledge all the parts of me. So I think that's ultimately what it comes down to for me, is showing up in my fullness, whatever that means, every single part of me in the mix, authentically me, and not pretending to be anything other than who I am.
Mm, that's a fantastic definition and exploration as well. Like I really like the whole notion of just really letting go of the things that suppress us. And quite often as men, we do hold on to things in a way that can be really, really unhealthy and manifest in a whole variety of different ways. But if we step into that space of just being a lot more open and a lot freer in expressing who we truly are, like a lot of those things wouldn't actually manifest in the way that they do in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's good reasons that we learn to suppress those parts of ourselves, because as children, they often got us into trouble. You know, our parents may have done the best they could, but there's some parts of us I just didn't like, punished for them or hurt in some ways. So then the downside is those parts of us often don't grow up. And so we keep pressing them as opposed to showing up as real men and owning all the parts of us so we can show up authentically in the world.
Absolutely. Now, Benny, in the introduction, I mentioned that you've been involved with the Mankind Project for some time now, initially as a participant and then later as a facilitator. And I was just wondering if you could share with people at home just a little bit of background into the Mankind Project and how you were actually drawn to the Mankind Project and how you've actually gone on and become a facilitator of that work.
Sure. I'm South African by birth. I moved here in 1996. And when I arrived in England, I had a lot of unresourced stuff with my parents. Obviously with myself, that I at that point I pretty much blamed them for everything that was going wrong in my life. And I went for counseling. And I remember one day sitting with a counselor, and he got really angry at me. And he said, "Are you going to spend the rest of your life blaming your parents, or are you going to get up and take responsibility for your life as a man?" Initially I was quite shocked by it because I wasn't happy being spoken to in that way, being, paying for a session. And yet it was a great wake-up call for me. And so he pointed me in the direction of the Mankind Project. And I did my weekend in 1998. To be honest, I hated almost every single minute of it. at that point, it's funny now, 11 years after, I found it really hard to be with a group of men. There's typically about 30, 32 men going through the training and at least that number of men facilitating. So you're talking about 60, 70 men together for a whole weekend. And I was really uncomfortable with that because I had no, at that point, skill or ability to connect with men in a clean way. It was either around booze and pub talk or small talk. The way that it works is if you do the weekend and you call to come back, you can staff some of the subsequent weekends. So I did go back about a year after I did my initial weekend. I went back and I realized that for me there was something there that I didn't get anywhere else. Here a group of men, it's a non-for-profit organization. Most of the staffmen on the weekends pay actually to go and staff the weekend. And it was just a profound experience for me. And in terms of my own personal development, being around men that I can have some deep, open communication with, and it's not about a pat on the back. Although I believe as men, we are so hard on ourselves sometimes. Sometimes it does take someone else to point that out and actually help us see, our own goals. At the same time, there's a bunch of men that would hold me accountable and point out if I didn't do what I said I was going to do. So sometimes it was a cuddle, sometimes it was a kick up the bum. For the most, just a bunch of amazing men, and it's international. I used to travel a lot for work. So all these weekends I did, they do these weekends around the world, as I said, in Europe, South Africa, Canada, the U.S., Australia, and everywhere I went, I just found the same type of men, and I just kept going back because it was partly for me giving back something to other men who came through the training, and undeniably a big part of it was what I got out of it and still do get out of it. We just did a weekend now in Devon last weekend, and it's such a privilege to see that type of personal transformation, see men being challenged. One of the ways the weekends are described is radical departure, and I can't think of a better description than that. To see men being challenged by men and challenging themselves, especially in such a profound way, and leave on the Sunday, totally different to how they arrived two days ago. So I absolutely just love doing it.
Amazing. Well, I like the whole notion of like a radical departure, and actually I guess in that whole realm, like there does seem to be like a specific sort of etiquette with men in terms of what you can say, what you can't say. Typically it centers around football or beer or or work, but like actually breaking through those confines and actually as you said, make a radical departure and start exploring some of the other parts of our psyche that just as a part of who we are as the work and football side of things, I guess, as well.
Absolutely, you know, and there's nothing, of course, you know, wrong with football. And the other thing that men like to have fun, men like to be active and play sports. And if that's the only way that I can connect with another man through, you know, sport or drink or whatever else it be in my life, that was a big gap. And it was a gap I didn't even know I had until the gap started being filled by men who were willing to show up authentically as real men. In whatever that meant, the good in inverted quotes and the bad, and really challenging me and holding me to a higher standard so I can go out in the world and be the man that I really want to be. I just don't know anything else out there that does it quite in that way. You know, you can imagine 70 men circling up is quite a profound lot of masculine male energy. And some amazing transformation happens. It you know, reminds me a little bit in the old days, the elders used to come for teenage boys and used to take them away and initiate them. You know, that's a term that was used. Initiate means beginning something new. And so after this ordeal, which was, you know, in the forest or in the woods, wherever it was, when the boys came back to the village, then everybody knew they were now men, and most importantly, they knew that they were men. Mm. Yet in our society, that doesn't happen much. And so I know for me, and I know because I hear it from other men, you know, a lot of the time wearing suits and going to an office in a man's body, yet feeling like a little boy, because that process never happens. That process of actually breaking away from mothering, being mothered, or being attached to being fathered in a certain way, and go out there and finding, you know, our own deep masculinity within ourselves, because that's ultimately, you know, the only way to ever show up authentically and powerfully in life is to claim who I am and break free from from the mother's energy in a way. And, you know, just hearing myself say that, I sometimes am asked about, you know, so what's this about men working with men? It sounds like it's excluding women. Mm. And, you know, I think it's a great question for me. Just what I witness is it's only when I can be at peace with myself as a man that I can connect at a deeper level with women, you know, with a wife or a partner or a girlfriend or a boyfriend, whatever it is. So we believe that men have to do that type of work with men, so that they can come back into the rest of the world and connect with everyone in them in a more meaningful way.
Mm. Excellent, I agree entirely. Now, Benny, you've got a breadth of experience with different personal development modalities and a number that I'm very, very excited about, such as NLP, hypnosis, EFT, just to name a few of them. And I was just wondering that these new technologies or these new personal development modalities, how relevant are they to men and helping men to create real radical transformation?
For me, they're the most powerful tools that I know. You know, I was one of those people that bought a self-help book a week. And typically when I got to the exercises at the back, I would kind of skip them. And then by the next book and the next book, I came across EFT in 2003 when I'd been really, really deeply depressed for a long time. And I was totally blown away by it in the first 3 or 4 minutes of my session. And I knew that I had to learn how to do that. So, you know, so I did. And then I still had a sense that even though it was really powerful, sometimes it didn't help me to shift the things that I wanted to shift within myself. And so when I found NLP and hypnosis, those are just the missing blocks for me. So I think they're probably all the most sophisticated tools now. I think something like NLP and hypnosis is often misunderstood for what it really is. I'm so blessed to literally travel the world and have clients and do groups all around the place to just constantly hear stories of how men and women are able to transform their life in a relatively short time. You know, so recently, the conventional modalities, even for something simple like a fear or phobia, took sometimes up to 7 years to actually work, and now we can do that in an hour. So I think it's absolutely vital, you know, for all well-being, and certainly with the challenges that men face today, I think it's a great way to make some rapid transformation.
I don't know, for me personally, like, I've experienced all the different modalities, and traditional methods of change can take quite a long time, and I was actually surprised at how quick some of the, I guess, lifelong challenges that I'd been struggling with, just with like one or two sessions of EFT, just completely release them and not really have any, almost like it's the pattern was totally broken.
Yeah.
And is that something that EFT can do, or combining with both NLP and hypnosis, do for most challenges that we face?
You know, EFT's gotten a name for the one-minute wonder, you know, and we do get the one-minute wonders where somebody would shift a major, even lifelong depression, literally within a minute. And even though that does happen, you know, I am very cautious to make those types of claims. In fact, I don't make them. I see EFT as an ongoing tool. One of the great things about EFT is it's so easy to learn that people can use it on themselves. You know, in my own case, it was absolutely just an instrumental part of me overcoming depression. You know, I was suicidally depressed at some point, and I was able to totally clear it out. Something like food cravings, you know, obesity is on the rise. It's not uncommon for me to see food cravings totally disappear within an hour session. You know, pornography is something that seems to be more prevalent amongst men than women. Again, that's something that I had at some point and was able to clear it, you know, with EFT. And it's for some people that may sound like a small thing, but I can tell you from my own experience, to be able to shift something like that, like an addiction like that, with a few sessions of tapping, it's really profound and very liberating to be able to do that and really make the changes in my life that I want to make. And of course, NLP and hypnosis just beautifully supplements that. Because EFT uses the body's energy system to release all old emotional blocks, you know, physical trauma, emotional trauma. And then we use NLP to support that and if you want to, like, scratching a CD or a record, to scratch old behaviors, old patterns of behaviors that just don't serve us anymore, so that we can easily, literally easily and effortlessly step out of those old behaviors and into new behaviors. And then it's like the icing on the cake, if you want, is hypnosis by using, it's such a gentle way to communicate with the unconscious mind. You know, 95% of what we do, say, think, and feel is governed by unconscious behavior, by our unconscious mind. So using hypnosis to install more supportive beliefs and expectations about ourselves and as men and in the world, it's almost like turning on the autopilot, if you want, towards success and you know, really showing up as the man that I want to be. So for me, those three together is just a really beautiful combination, very powerful. And there's a lot of results out there that show that it works in the real world.
Mm. Yeah, I was just wondering, Ben, if you had any stories that you can share of guys really making some powerful breakthroughs, whether it's through like one of your workshops that you facilitated, or indeed through your personal one-on-one work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was, I was thinking today, one of my first clients, I worked up in Scotland at the time. He was in London in a flat, and we worked on a fear of heights. And you know, I was still pretty novice, just practicing on people I knew. And we worked on the phone for about 20 minutes. And he then went out on his balcony and he came back on the phone. He said, "Benny, it's fine. You know, I have no anxiety. Can't believe it." He says, "I've never been able to do this in my entire life." He was a man in his late 20s. And, you know, I thought that was great.
And he was living in a high-rise building.
he was, but he said he'd never been able to go out on the balcony.
Amazing.
You know, so I thought initially that was great. And then I got a text message from him. Now, I'm from South Africa. I'm from Cape Town, you know, with Table Mountain. And I got a text message from him one day saying, "I just abseiled Table Mountain." And, it was just from not being able to stand on the balcony to actually being able to abseil Table Mountain. Again, you know, for me, what it means to him to have that freedom to do that, or a man who was asked to sing at a bar mitzvah, and he was just panic-stricken, he couldn't do it, would have a single session. He was able to actually go out and enjoy himself on stage, which, you know, again, for most people is, you know, well, what's the big deal with that? The big deal for him was he could be with his family in the way that he really wanted to. You know, it absolutely meant a lot to him. And then on the more serious side, quite recently, a client who also had been quite depressed. I'm passionate about depression, and part of my life mission is to eradicate depression on the planet because I know it's possible. I know I've been there. I know what it's like, and I know what it's like to be on the other side of it. So worked with her on her depression. She was waking up most mornings feeling pretty dark and also had suicidal thoughts from time to time. And we did a couple of sessions, and she couldn't wait to get out of bed in the mornings. You know, she's starting up a new business, and she was just all excited about this new business. Total transformation in a week with two sessions. It's just, and now that I do even more of this type of work, you know, I constantly get messages from people about food cravings disappearing in a single session. You know, I just went to a restaurant for the first time in however long. I'm relaxed around the menu and the dessert table. Just real practical day-to-day stuff that people are able to transform and just live a much happier life for it.
That's amazing. Some great stories there. Cool, Benny. Well, as I mentioned earlier on in the call, we've had questions come in from all around the world, and I just thought I'd kick you off with a question from Ben in the UK, and Ben asks, how do you interest men who most need to do this work to even consider it?
You know, one of my values, specifically leadership values, is leading by example. And I'm thinking of Gandhi, who said, you know, be the change that you want to see in the world. So for me, it always starts with me. And so what I find in my life, when I show up in a real authentic way, the way that I want to, that seems to attract men in a way that they want something that I have. So for me, you know, nobody likes being told what to do. So what I find the approach of, hey, here's the weekend, you have to go do it, typically doesn't have the response that I want. So for me, it starts with me. The more authentic, open in my communication I am with someone, you know, the level of trust just deepens. When I think most people will know what I'm talking about if I talk about a BS detector, you know, having that sixth sense that we just know when something isn't quite what it seems to be. So when I find myself being authentic in my communication with other men, the trust level just almost by default just heightens. And so that's where I'll start. You know, I start with me in the way that I want to. And then just having an honest heart-to-heart conversation. If it's a man that I care about, that I really want to have a taste of something that means something to me, you know, I'll just ask him. You know, I went in this weekend. This is what I learned about myself. This is what I learned about life. This is the changes that I've experienced because of it. You know what? I'd love you to go. I care about you, and I'd love you to go. I think, you know, often we, with good intention, try and manipulate people into doing what we want them to do versus just being really open and authentic, saying, I care about you. This is what I want for you. You know, do you want to go? Just be really upfront, honest, and open about it. And as I say, you know, lead by example. Practice what you preach about, and men will be attracted to you and want to do more of it.
Well, actually, Ben, I just thought I'd share a personal experience of going along to a Mankind Project graduation ceremony. I haven't actually done the training itself, but I did have the privilege of actually going along to the graduation ceremony and actually just witnessing a whole group of guys actually speaking from that place after the weekend on that course was really quite something to behold. And it certainly was incredibly inspiring for me personally and certainly did move me to want to find out more about the work and potentially, when the time is right, go on one of the courses myself. And is that something you've seen as well with the Mankind graduation ceremonies?
Absolutely, you know, and that's exactly my point. Those men weren't trying to sell you on something. They were being authentic about their own experience and something that attracted you. You know, if somebody stood in front and told you what a great weekend it was, my guess is you wouldn't have had the same response. So we have we actually had a graduation last night, and the next one will be in December when there's another training coming up. We do 4 weekends a year in the UK at the moment.
Great, awesome. Okay, this one's actually from Laura in the UK, and we do have lots of women actually tuning as well. So I do want to say hello and acknowledge all the ladies on the call this evening as well. And Laura asks, most women I know have dedicated much of their lives to their inner work and healing slash development. How do you recommend we bring out the best in our men and our relationships when they may not have had the same priorities?
You know, it's a great question. It reminds me of a friend of mine is a keen motorcyclist, and she's the only woman in the group of 6 men, and so they go motorcycling quite a bit and then camp out for the weekend. And she tells me that when they're together in a big group, you know, a lot of the communication between the men is really macho stuff. You know, it's bikes and women and rugby and soccer and booze and whatever it may be. Yet when they with her one-on-one, they all complain about the fact that they don't seem to be able to connect at a deeper level with the other men in the same group. So, you know, Laura, I suppose the first thing is I don't think everything is as it seems. And my belief is that deep down, all men have a desire for that type of authentic communication connection. I think what's true for a lot of men out there is they don't know how to ask for help. You know, it's so hard for a lot of us to actually ask for help. And secondly, I don't think a lot of them know where to go, you know, to get this type of help. So also, as I responded before, I think it always starts, you know, it's got to start with you. And it's important that you are clear and clean in your communication. If there's a specific man that you are thinking of, you know, make sure that you're clear and clean within yourself and just have an open heart-to-heart conversation with the man that it is. And be mindful of, you know, of your boundaries. There's a big difference between telling someone what you want them to do, like, I want you to go and do some personal work, versus saying, do you know what, these are the things in our relationship that's not working for me. Here are my boundaries. And that's being not being met in a certain way. I think most men respond a lot better to clean, open communication. You know, men and women do communicate a little differently, or some people would argue, you know, very differently. But again, you know, I can just come back to being real, being you, being authentic, making sure that the man knows about opportunities. And as I said, I think a lot of men find it hard to ask for help. Make sure that that he knows where he can go for help, and be very mindful to keep your agenda really open. If there's going to be any manipulation on your behalf, you know, wanting him to go do something for you, and you don't ask him in a clean way, I think the odds of, you know, is not very, very good for success. What I find with men, if I just come from my heart in my communication, even if they don't agree with me, 9 times out of 10, I'm being heard. And I have a sense, you know, that's really what your question's about also, is just, is to make it clear what it is, you know, that you want in your relationships with men. And, you know, relationships is in NLP terms of nominalization. So making it clear how it is that you want to relate to these men, if there are specific men that you ask the question about, and seeing what may also have to change in you so that you can relate to these men in the way that you really want.
That's a great answer. I guess with the motivation for this call, the whole thread of men not necessarily feeling like they could ask for help or even knowing where to ask for help, was those two things really was two of the primary motivating forces for actually setting up this call itself. So thanks for mentioning
that. You know, it just amazes me, Damien. I regularly do this in big circles of men and ask them, you know, who finds it easy to ask for help, or conversely, who finds it difficult to ask for help. And almost every single hand goes up. You know, we, for some reason, it seems to almost be imprinted in us how hard it is to ask for help. You know, I've had 10 years of experience now, specifically in the Mankind Project. You know, I have amazing men and friends in my life that I know will do whatever it takes to help. I mean, even now, sometimes just, you know, I just can't get myself to do it. And that's also for me, you know, about growing up and being mature and having the compassion for myself to and the dignity to understand when I really need help. It's so easy for me, and I think for men in general, to think that I have to do it all myself. When, you know, that's just, sometimes it's just not true. And to really take the risk and ask for help in a clean way and see what happens. You know, in my business lately, I've had to ask for a lot of help. And as it so turns out, actually, from a lot of men. And I was blown away by the response. Now, if you think about it, when somebody asks you for help, especially if it's someone you care about, more often than not, that makes us feel really good about ourselves. Yet, you know, when it's using the other foot and it's us asking for help, then very often, you know, it's very hard for men to do. So I suppose what I'm also saying is it's not about letting a man off the hook in any way. It is about having compassion for him in his struggle. You know, the struggle as it may be, and the struggle to ask for help, and to meet him where he is and not necessarily, you know, where you'd like him to be.
That's a great answer. Now, this question actually comes from Zama in South Africa. And Zama asks, how can men break the old belief of always having to be in charge?
You know, I didn't quite know how to interpret that question initially. And because I'm a man, you know, it's difficult sometimes to step out of myself. You know, my authentic response to that is the days that I have a need or a desire to be in charge are usually the days that I feel quite insecure about myself. So I think, again, you know, it's got to start with you and see how you contribute to this relationship, if it is with a specific man or men, that they're always in charge. How do you play into that game if you do? You know, what part can you take in the way you relate to these men? From a male perspective, though, when I notice that in my behavior, you know, now a little light bulb goes on in my head and I go, oh, okay, so I'm being very bossy today. You know, I'm telling people what to do. I'm not taking no for an answer. I'm kind of aggressive in a, you know, in a very polite way. It's very easy to be aggressive using something like sarcasm. So right now, light bulb goes on in my head, and I ask myself, what's really going on? When I take the time to actually check inside and see what's going on, I'll typically find that there's some insecurity floating around driving my behavior. You know, all behavior is state-dependent. So what I mean by that is it's our emotional states that drive our behavior. And what you may be experiencing, Zama, is the behavior on the outside. And I'm, you know, I'm just suggesting to you that what's happening on the inside of that man being, as you said, you know, having to be in charge is probably very different to what it looks like on the outside. You know, it's almost like the more insecure I become, the more bossy I have to be to bolster myself up in some futile attempt to feel good about myself, even if it's just for a short while. And again, you know, a little bit like I said to Laura, I think also that every man is on his own journey. I mean, every person is on their own journey. And for you to, I suppose, respect that in a way, that a man may be on his own journey, communicate really clearly to him what it is in your relationship that may not be working for you, and being very mindful of your own boundaries. You know, if there's something in his behavior that is crossing a boundary for you, then the only one that can change that is you. You know, by moving away from that specific man. There's some people, you know, that I know that I don't want to be around, and so I'm not around them. It isn't about changing anyone else at the end of the day. It's about loving and supporting someone and accepting them where they are, choosing if I want to be in relationship with them. You know, if I do, then what is it that I have to do in me so that I can be with them where they are and maybe support them to a different place for them. But ultimately, you know, and I sound like a broken record, but for me, it does always come back to me. Instead of wondering how is it that the other person needs to change, how do I have to change? It's you know, it's got to come back to that in the end.
Mm. Excellent. Now, this one comes from John in the UK, and John asks, hi, Benny. My question is this. I know what it is that I need to face from my childhood, but the very thought of it terrifies me, and I find myself putting it off. Do you know of a surefire way for me to gain the courage needed to go back and explore this? I've tried to access it in the past through self-hypnosis and haven't been able to uncover it. P.S. I've also started psychotherapy again. Is it something I need to do myself? Thanks.
Well, John, first of all, you know, I want to acknowledge your courage in taking the steps to resolve these really sensitive issues. And we back to the same thing in a way about, you know, asking for help. I read in your question, you know, you ask, is it something I need to do myself? And a great step, I see, you know, you've actually asked for some help and you're back into psychotherapy again. For me, you know, even if I stand in front of a mirror, I can't see every part of me. Doesn't matter how I stand, there's always a part of me that I cannot see. So with these types of issues, especially if they go back a long time and they're sensitive of the nature that you mentioned in your email, I would seriously suggest that you get some help with that. You know, as you clearly are doing, you know, John gave us some information that Damien didn't read out. I am just going to mention it briefly. John mentioned sexual abuse. And, you know, sexual abuse is a lot more prevalent than I think a lot of us know. I'm, again, in the privileged position to hear a lot of those stories, you know, moms or dads abusing boys or girls, it goes across all gender lines. And so I hear a lot of really, really sad stories. And the, you know, you say in the beginning of your question that it just the thought of facing it terrifies you. And I mean, that is totally understandable. But one of the great things about EFT is that we use it in a way that we never re-traumatize clients. So what I mean by that is there is no need to revisit all painful, terrifying memories. There's a lot of techniques. You know, just one of them is called tearless trauma, where we work around the issue so gently that there is no need, you know, at all to re-experience any of the old pain, fear, trauma, whatever it may be. And, you know, on the extreme side of things, I had a client a while back who had been ritually sexually abused, which, you know, was terrifying, the stories that he told. And we were able to start clearing these issues in such a way that to this day, he never had to tell me what specifically happened. You know, there's just so many ways with EFT that we can do this so it isn't as terrifying. And again, you know, I think it's great that you've asked for help already, and see with that type of intense trauma, I think EFT has a pretty good track record in really helping people to let go of, you know, all those old memories that's stored in our bodies, all that trauma from years ago. For people who have been abused, will know, you know, it's a drop of a hat, and we're straight back in that experience. And, you know, the shame and the guilt and sometimes self-blame that goes with that, I would highly recommend, you know, some EFT on that to just, you know, just clear it. If you've made a decision that, John, that you've had enough, then, you know, I absolutely applaud you and just keep taking the next step. I can tell you from my experience, it is possible to work through this to the extent that it would just disappear. It would just be another memory with no emotional content. And, you know, if you want to talk to me a little bit more offline or email me, I'd be happy to support you in any way that I can.
Awesome. And thanks, John, for the question. Now, this one comes from Andrew in the UK, and Andrew asks, hi, Benny. Do you believe our male-centered issues in society today such as violent and abusive relationships, could be reduced if we connected with the ancient wisdoms surrounding the rite of passage rituals of progression from boyhood to manhood? And if so, how might we go about integrating this into mainstream society?
You know, a great question, Andrew. And it actually reminds me, you know, what I said earlier on this call. In the old days, it was, you know, at some level, it seems to me just so much easier. When the elders knew that a boy was coming of age, then they would take him away and they would go through a rite of passage, you know, which involved a descent, like a way out of his comforts, an ordeal of some sort. And then, you know, a crucial part, a homecoming, a celebration where they were invited or welcomed back into the village, knowing that they'd been through some transformative experience. And as I also said before, I hear so many men talk about feeling like little boys in men's bodies and trying to compensate for that in some way, you know, a bigger car, a bigger house, a bigger salary, working harder, whatever it may be. I think we have lost something really vital, you know, and it's something, it's such a deep issue for me. I'm only, you know, I've been at it for a little bit, and I'm only seemingly beginning to scratch the surface of what it really means to have those types of rituals, like a passage. And, you know, Damien, you and I talked earlier today about storytelling and the power of it, you know, myths that's out there that doesn't seem to be as much a part of our society as I think would really do us good. Now, you know, with the new warrior training adventure that we can put on by the Mankind Project, I know the word initiation has a bad connotation, you know, in some circles. For me, in my language, in my experience, it is a type of rite of passage. It's really making a decision as a man, where do I stand? You know, am I willing to stand up and be counted? You know, if ever the world needed leaders, men and women, to stand up, it's now. So for me, the Warrior Weekend, it's called the Warrior Weekend, is an absolute opportunity to let go of whatever it is that's in my way of showing up in the world as the man that I want to be. You know, it's just a profoundly transformational experience. And that's the only one that I know. You know, at some point I did every workshop I could put my hands on. So I've done just a load of stuff all around the world. And this one is the only one that I know of. I'm sure there must be other stuff out there. But that's the only one that I know of that in my model of what you're talking about and the actually happened in our world. There's a lot of great work being done in Brighton at the moment, actually, in the UK, with younger boys. You know, the type of men that in warrior training adventure is typically middle-aged. You know, they do come from 18 to 76, I think, was the oldest one we've ever had. But typically they are middle-aged men as opposed to younger boys, which, you know, if we can reintroduce that into society in some way, I think we'll live in a much, much better, much different world.
Absolutely. And I totally echo those statements. And now is a real powerful time for us all to stand up and be the people we've come here to be.
Absolutely. I just want to say, you know, keeping ourselves small in the world and stuck in shame or guilt or whatever it may be for us, you know, it's just not serving anyone. And ultimately, whatever therapy, training, you know, whatever it is, ultimately it's up to each one of us to make that decision, to make a difference, to take the next step, you know, if that's what you really want.
Cool. I've got time for one more question. It's from Phil in Sweden. And Phil asks, I'm going to become a father for the first time in February. Do you have any special advice for dads?
Hi, Phil. Congratulations. I hope it all goes well. You know, one of the things I'm still learning is to never give people advice unless they really ask for it. So, again, I think it's when you do the inner work, to your own inner personal work to resolve the past, that you can be the best father you can possibly be. You know, I'm sure there's some people on this call that had great mothers and great fathers, and leadership model, role models in their lives as they were growing up, and others may not have had that. So, especially for you, if there's any part of your relationship with your parents or your siblings, you know, how you related to them, if there's any part of that that was a nurturing for you when you were growing up and you may still be carrying some of that around, then the only way to prevent you from passing that on to your children, as far as I know, is to resolve that within yourself. You know, I worked with way over 1,000 men around the world, and our relationships with our, especially with our fathers as men and with our mothers, you know, it just have a huge impact on how we raise our children. If there's any resentment, guilt, shame, anger, whatever it may be for you, if there is any of that, and you want that not to spill over to your children, you've got to do your own work. And, you know, I mean, the Mankind Project is one way of doing that. EFT, NLP, hypnosis is another way. Whichever modality works for you, the important thing is that you do it. And here's another thing. There's no way you can do that by yourself. I'm just saying that in my own experience. You need someone to help you with that. And, you know, and if you were blessed to have beautiful, loving, nurturing relationships with your parents, what a tremendous gift to pass on to your children.
Well, Benny, you've shared some phenomenal insights over the past hour, and just really wanted to say how much I've really taken away personally from what you've shared, particularly with the notion of being self-empowered, and actually if there's work there to do on ourselves personally, to actually take that step forward and start exploring it, and also where necessary actually engaging, whether it's coaches, therapists, EFT practitioners, to help us through that terrain. Mm. Like, I have no doubt that people on this call will have really been moved by some of the things that you shared this evening, and also would love to actually find out more about the work that you do in the world. So I was just wondering if you could share with people how they can actually find out more about your work, and also how they can find out more about the Mankind Project as well, wherever they are.
Sure.
In the world.
Well, thank you, Damien. You know, first of all, I want to say to those men that's ready for radical departure, want to do some deep personal change and really change the way you show up in the world as a man, go to mkp.org. Just simply MKP stands for the Mankind Project, mkp.org. There's a whole list of centers all around the world and the weekend dates that they do. So if you go to mkp.org, you can get all the information that you need on there. If you need any more information, drop me an email after this call. Now, I know there would be some people on this call, maybe, you know, fear of heights or food cravings, fear of flying, depression, physical pain. And my guess is that there will also be some people on the call that have some dream, some goal, or some vision that you haven't quite managed to get to yet. So, you know, my question is, where did that dream go? What happened to it, and why is it that you're not living it? Now, you know, I hear a lot in my work with people, I hear about, yes, but, you know, yes, but I don't have the money, yes, but I don't have the time, you know, I don't have the right qualifications. Or I hear about, if then, you know, if I get the promotion, then I'll do it. Or if I get the perfect partner or the perfect body, then I'll do it. And, you know, the other favorite one is one day, you know, I'll do it one day. So my question really for you, if that's true for any of you, is, you know, when is one day? And how about making one day actually, you know, 2 day? Just do it like right now and just think, what is it costing you to not actually live in your dream, to wait for tomorrow that, you know, that may never come? So whatever it is that's holding you back, get a sense of what it's costing you and know that it is possible to make change. And the only reason I can say that is because I've done it myself. You know, I see pretty amazing results in my practice and working on myself with other people. These techniques just simply get results in the real world. And I know there's probably some people that think it sounds too good to be true. And I also know that there's people on the call that's ready to take the next step and start creating the life that you want. Now, if you're one of those people, send me an email now on info@deepliving.com to find out how I can help. That's info@deepliving.com. On my website, deepliving.com, you'll find a whole lot of information about what I offer, from workshops and trainings. You know, there's too much to go into detail about it now, and my specialty about breaking through depression. And, you know, I also think that there may be some people wondering why they would want to work with me. And here's why. I just so believe in these techniques and how I apply them that I offer a money-back guarantee on all the work I do. It's really simple as that. If we do a one-to-one session, a workshop, or a training, And afterwards, you don't feel, think, believe that you got absolute value for your money. You just ask for it back, and, you know, touch wood, it hasn't happened in 7 years. Because I walk the talk, you know, I live by example, and I do these things on myself, and have transformed my life in a way that I didn't think was possible just in the last few months. So also, Damien, I have an offer for people on the call tonight. If you send me an email to info@deepliving.com right after the call, I'll send you a free lifestyle assessment questionnaire to determine and work out what I think is the best course of action for you to get you where you want to be. And I'll send you a free personalized strategy of to just break through whatever it is that's holding you back. So if that's of interest, send me an email on info@deepliving.com right after the call, and I'll get that free assessment to you right away.
Awesome. That's a fantastic opportunity for people. So that's info@deepliving.com.
Yes.
Awesome, Benny. Now, there was one question that I did really want to ask you on the call, and one thing I didn't actually mention in the introduction was the fact that you actually translated one of my favorite books of all time into Afrikaans, and it's the book called The Alchemist. And I was just wondering if you could actually share with people what it was like to actually bring Paulo Coelho's work to the Afrikaans-speaking people in South Africa.
Yes, it was great, Damien. You know, it's one of those things. I was at the office one day, and I thought, I had this idea coming to my head. I want to translate The Alchemist into Afrikaans, and almost immediately I heard this other voice saying, "Well, you know, who am I to do it?" Then, you know, all the BS that came up, and I just decided to do it anyway. And so I got in touch with Paulo Coelho. It hadn't been done. He put me in touch with his publishers, and, you know, some hard work, and a few months later, the book was actually published in South Africa about 3 years ago. So if there's anybody out there that have any such great dreams and visions and just, you know, these flashes of inspiration that come up, you know what, just do it. If I can do it, you can do it. And it's one of my, you know, commercially, it was not a success at all. Yet, I just when you mentioned it now on the call, I just can't tell you just how immensely proud I am of myself of actually having followed through on one of my dreams and just made it happen. So, yeah, thanks for that question.
My pleasure. And, I just wanted to thank everyone at home, and just really wanted to congratulate and acknowledge everyone who sent in a question this week. Both men and women, it was awesome to get them in, and particularly, I guess, in terms of actually stepping forward and asking for guidance or help, it's an amazing step forward. So I just really wanted to thank you and acknowledge each and every single one of you. Also, just wanted to acknowledge and honour each and every single one of you listening as well, whether you're listening in now live or whether you actually listen back to this recording on the People You Should Meet site. Yeah, just by allowing these thoughts and ideas to permeate your consciousness, literally alone can be transformative. So I just wanted to encourage you to continue to come back to this site often, listen to this call itself many times as you like. And if you feel that it will actually change or inspire friends, families or colleagues, I do actually encourage you as well to take that step forward and share this very powerful material. Now, just to finish everything off, Benny, I was just wondering if you had any closing words of inspiration for men sitting at home and for, indeed, women on how to actually be more or more true to who they really are.
Damien, just before, I know we had some more questions that we didn't get to. If you're on this call and your question wasn't answered, please, I don't have your email address. So if you send it to me directly, info@deepliving.com, I'd be very happy to answer your question. Damien, I suppose it's two parts for me. The one is asking yourself, what is it costing you not to live the life that you want to live, not to live the life of your dreams? And then, you know, and we all have to do this for ourselves, no matter how much help we get from the outside world. Make the decision inside yourself to go and do it. Just make the decision that that's what you want and that's what you're going to go for. You know, all the other stuff about asking for help along the way, that's all relevant and great. Ultimately, decide that you're worth it, make the decision, and make it happen. It is possible.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Benny, for sharing your wealth of wisdom and experience this evening. And Once again, thank you to everyone at home, and we look forward to having you on a PeopleYouShouldMeet.com call again soon.
Thanks, Damien.
Okay, take care.
Bye.